This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Shamla Ganesan. Tonight, we're talking about the leadership shift in DAP and more broadly, what a party's leader says about their direction.
First, we talk about the outcome of the DAP National Congress and where this leaves DAP in Malaysia's political landscape. Then, what does leadership of a party mean in a larger sense? Does it truly matter who's at the helm?
So we want to know, what do you think of our current crop of political leaders? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It's 6:08, and if we start off by looking at the news hook, right? So basically, DAP had its 17th National Congress yesterday, following the Central Executive following the Central Executive Committee election. There was new leadership for DAP that was announced. In other words, Seremban MP Anthony Lok has succeeded Lim Guan Eng as DAP's new Secretary General. Lim Guan Eng was elected National Chairman, and the deputies for the SecGen position include Liu Chin Tong, V. Sivakumar, Tengku Zulpuri Shah bin Rajapuji, and Gobind Singh Deo remains as the national deputy chairman.
So lots of, I was going to say lots of new developments, but in a sense, it's actually just a sort of shuffling around of people who have been at the forefront of the party in many ways. But that said, I think it is interesting because obviously when there's a change in this sort of leadership, there's always opportunities for new directions. There's opportunities for new people to come to the fore. I also think that this is happening against the backdrop of these kinds of shifts or conversations happening in other parties as well, and particularly at a time when DAP, as part of the opposition coalition, is also contending with ideas of what exactly the opposition means, ideas of what being a coalition means. So I think this is sort of an interesting thing to observe as part of DAP, but also within the larger landscape of our current politics.
Which is actually where we want to go, right? Because like you said, there have been calls echoing from party to party about leadership, whether it is because people are unhappy with leadership, whether it's because they just wish that there were more opportunities for new voices, whether it's because there is a perception that party leaders no longer represent an ethos that is relevant to voters or specifically have led them down the wrong path in specific state elections. So I think that there are a number of reasons why this question of leadership is coming up. But the other thing, at least for me, is also that of how closely a party's larger perception is tied to who leads it. So whether or not, you know, depending on who the leader is, what they say, the kind of personality that they have when they're out and about speaking in parliament or giving stump speeches, what have you, what that then says about how people perceive the party. Because if we look at DAP, right, and I think it's worth looking at two different sides of it. On the one hand, you have the new Secretary General, Anthony Lok, saying that this is a new phase led by 3G leaders, third generation leaders, and saying that, you know, there's going to be a continuation of the party's tradition of providing opportunities for younger members from diverse backgrounds to prove themselves, saying that talent and idealism are the party's most important assets. On the flip side, you have also the reality that the leadership in DAP, or at least the public perception of the leadership in DAP, has been very much shaped by one family in particular. And one part of that family actually stepped down. So DAP vet Lim Kit Siang actually withdrew from contesting in the party's elections. He's been with the party for 56 years. He's now going to have the position of mentor. And I mean, if we look at the combination of Lim Kit Siang and Lim Guan Eng, they've actually held the SecGen post for a total of 48 years between the two of them.
The thing is, it's not like, by and large, any of our parties are free from this sort of, what's the word for it? Family dynamics, if I may say. So it is a sort of part of our politics that we can't seem to run away from. And it's not always a bad thing, but I think it can often, as you said, create a perception of a particular kind of ethos or ideology being carried on, often can be viewed as boxing out new blood, new voices. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what a Lim Guan Eng-led DAP would be like versus a one which was him and his father. And I also wonder where this leaves, I think, some of the newer names that have been very popular with the electorate, right? Even though within the party, they are still, I think, considered to be younger, newer members. So quite a bit to unpack there, I think.
So we're going to be starting off by looking at DAP and this shift in leadership. But then in the second half of our show, we're going to be focusing more widely on those points that we raised earlier, right? What a party's leader says about the party itself. Either way, we'd like to hear from you. What do you think of our current crop of political leaders? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be joined by James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about the shifts within DAP's leadership after their National Congress and more broadly, what leadership of a party signals, right, in terms of that party's direction. And we'd like to hear from you, considering all the conversation we've been hearing about all the parties, not just DAP. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think of our current crop of political leaders? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now, though, to hone in on DAP a bit is James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania. James, thanks for joining us.
Good evening.
So what were some of the big takeaways for you from DAP's National Congress over the weekend?
Thank you. So I think some of the key takeaways, I think the first one is really that the party is highly united. Most people do not realize that the DAP is actually the largest bloc in parliament with 42 seats. And these are the 42 seats that they won in 2018. So if you look at all the other parties, still being a lot of movement back and forth, but DAP appears to be highly united. And of course, the other interesting thing, well, for most people is that there was no crazy speeches. You saw lots of crazy speeches, for example, at the UMNO Assembly, where the party president was threatening one of their senior ministers. Secondly, I think we saw a smooth transition to a new leaders. Anthony Loke took over. The reason why I say smooth is because ever since last year, they were already putting a transition in place. A smooth transition means there's no major surprises, so that's always a good thing. The third item for me is, of course, women. They implemented the 30% quota for women, which I think is a really, really good thing. The fourth is, I think, the new youth leader. First time a youth leader from East Malaysia, from Sarawak, Kevin. And interestingly enough, they voted in her deputy, a young Malay lady, which is also, you know, historic in a way that we never had this before. And of course, the two final items are the things that you've spoken about. One is the retirement of Lim Kit Siang, who has become a party mentor from now on, which is historic. And of course, the final item, which you alluded to, but you didn't spend a lot of time, is of course the so-called defeat of the Ox Street Brigade, the top three people who were serving in the last government who were part of that Ivy League group. So I think these are some of the key highlights from the party convention.
Let's start with that leadership shift, right? The retirement of Lim Kit Siang. What do you think his legacy has been in Malaysian politics?
I think by and large, in the middle class, I think his legacy is very strong. I think a lot of people in the middle class will see him as the sort of leader that Malaysia should have. Somebody who has been fighting for a non-racial approach to Malaysian politics since the 1960s, who has remained true to his true north. He has never once, or there's never been any rumour of him jumping party. He has always stuck to the DAP. So I think his reputation by the middle class is strong. But I think he will have sort of a mixed legacy in the Chinese community. But his legacy, I think, will be very different in the Malay community. I think the Malay community, because of the way politics are structured in this country, he will have come across as a Chinese chauvinist and somebody who was sort of pushing for things that the Malay community does not want.
And we see Lim Guan Eng now being the chairman of DAP, Anthony Lok taking his place as the new Secretary General. What are you expecting to see from this?
Well, I think I expect Anthony Lok to have a very different type of style in leadership. You really can't compare the personality of Lim Guan Eng and Anthony Lok. Policies will be fairly similar, aims will be very similar, but I think the style will be very different. If you meet those two men, I'm sure you'll come across that they're completely different in terms of personality. Guan Eng sometimes comes across as a bit strong, perhaps a bit abrasive. Anthony Lok comes across as somebody, I don't want to use the word soft, but somebody who is much more agreeable to a lot of people. He's also a bit of a consensus builder. And I think by and large, he has a fairly good reputation across the aisle. So even when I interview people from UMNO and on the other side, they don't really say bad things about Anthony Lok.
Did we get a strong sense of the direction of the party after this weekend's meeting?
I think the party has always been fairly clear about which direction they're trying to push. They're trying to push for a non-religious, everyone knows the philosophy of Malaysian Malaysia. So I don't think they've actually deviated from that from day one. I think the thing that was unspoken at the party convention was that I think there was a lot of worry among senior members of the party about how the party will keep on to the 42 seats in the general elections. I think, you know, after the bad performance of DAP in Malacca, Sarawak and Johor, three state elections in a row, I think there was some pessimism among the leaders that they can hold on to the 42 seats. So I think there was a bit of that. But I think this convention was all about the retirement of Lim Kit Siang and the smooth transition to a new leader under Anthony Lok. I think it was both a celebration and also, you know, a celebration of a smooth transition, also a celebration of the political career of Lim Kit Siang.
We alluded to this earlier, the Lim family collectively has been in a position of power in DAP for close to 50 years. Is there an openness within the party to fresh leadership?
It's not really a question of whether there's fresh leadership. It is true that the Lim family's shadow looms large in DAP, but in some ways that can't be avoided because Lim Kit Siang, Lim Guan Eng were the Secretary General for such a long time. So there's no way you can run away from the Lim shadow. I think the important thing to remember is that since 2008, there has been a tremendous change in the way the DAP try to recruit people to put them in as candidates. So if you look at people like Johanna, you're all the so-called prominent people that you guys keep talking about, people don't realize that all of them has been in politics for, you know, just slightly over 10 years. They were all brought in after 2008. So before that, it was a completely different set of leaders. So they have gone through some sort of renewal. So it's not a question of openness. They're always working on a very difficult line because on the one hand, their traditional base is the Chinese community who expects them to at least protect the so-called Chinese red lines. And on the other hand, they know that there's no future for the DAP if they can't attract significant Malay or Indian support. So it's always working on a fine line.
Now, we've seen a number of popular young reps emerging from DAP. You mentioned Kelvin Yee earlier, but also people like Hannah Yeo or Kasturi Pato. Where do they fit within the party's current trajectory?
All these people that you mentioned are elected leaders. They're either YBs or they've stood as candidates before. I don't see any change. What I meant by that is that I don't expect any of them to step down in the next GE, which will be held later this year. All of them will be renominated. And I think most of them, well, at least the names that you've spoken just now, they will have a better than 50% chance of winning their seats again. I don't think there was any change in the overall direction of the party, but I think they are also aware that there's a very strong undercurrent among the voters, and especially among the Malay voters. There is a significant shift back to UMNO, and I think that worries them.
I wanted to bring up something that you mentioned right at the start of our interview, that there was a shout out of some people from the CEC, including Yeo Bi Yin, Tony Pua, Ong Kian Ming. What might this indicate?
Oh, this basically indicates that among the party delegates, there is a level of unhappiness about some of the key decisions they made. Within the party and within sections of the Chinese community, there was a lot of anger about DAP performance during the 22 months in power in Pakatang. That's the one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is that a lot of the Chinese, especially the Chinese intelligentsia, yeah, they've come around to the thinking that the things pushed by these Ivy League people, things like the MOU with the government, was a huge mistake, because basically it allows this government to survive, and this government has not delivered. So if you look at even simple things like the tenure of the prime minister, anti-party hopping bill, all these things are DOA, they are arrival. It's not even, you know, parliament has not settled it and will not deal with it, in fact. So I think increasingly people are saying that that was a major political call, and you made the wrong call, because you're helping a government that we don't like to stay in power. So I think it was very much that sort of a signal. So because it is that sort of a signal, this doesn't mean the end of their political careers. It simply means that they have to sit up for the next 5 years, and at the next party elections, they may well make a comeback.
Now, if we look ahead to the GE then, what sorts of alliances and negotiations do you see DAP having with other component parties within Pakatan Harapan? Do you think we'll see relationships shifting?
Relationships will definitely shift. I think if you speak to the senior DAP leadership, I think they're trying to work out a new model for Pakatan. I think it is quite clear that after the fall of Pakatan in 2020, people realize that the big gap they have to fill is the Malay vote in Pakatan. Malay vote, as you know, was basically taken up by Bersatu. Now that Bersatu has left, they need to deal with that issue. The other issue they need to deal with, of course, is that what's happening in PKR. PKR has a party election coming up, and that's likely to split the party, because of some of the people involved in that election are highly controversial figures. So it's a question of how do they reject Pakatan in such a way that they can mount a challenge to Barisan Nasional. Because I think not only DAP, everybody you talk to, there's a clear consensus, quite unusual on the Malaysian landscape. There's a clear consensus that the Malay ground has shifted back to UMNO. So the question is that how do you stop UMNO in GE15?
We have a couple of minutes left. And, you know, the perception has always been that DAP is a Chinese party. While they've pushed back on that, it persists still. So do you think this is something that the party can address, and how?
You really can't blame DAP for so-called being a Chinese party. At the start of the party, for the first 60s, 70s and 80s, right? The thing that was holding up the party was basically the Chinese community. They did not have really that many non-Chinese membership. A large number of Indians came in the 1990s. So the party really reflects the membership. If you want DAP to change the focus, the only way is to have more Malay members, more Indian members, more Iban members. Then, of course, it will reflect the multi-interest of the party. Because like all political parties, right, the delegates are actually from the branches themselves. They're actually from the grassroots themselves. So if your entire branch is made up 100% Chinese members, obviously they're going to, they're going to dwell on issues like Chinese education, Chinese schools, what have you. Hawker licenses, all that sort of thing. So it is very much a reflective of the membership of the DAP rather than the fact that they are purposely harping on Chinese issues.
Are there any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
The only final thought I have is that I think Kit Sian did the right thing by retiring. I think he's retiring at a very good moment. Like I said, everyone is thinking that the DAP will not do well in the next GE15. So he's retiring at a very good time. And I think he's also leaving the party in a very good shape. So it's really up to the younger members of DAP to bring up to the next level.
James, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much.
That was James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania, weighing in on the shifts in leadership in DAP after their 17th National Congress. After this, we are going to talk more broadly about political leadership in our country, party leadership in particular, and what it says about the various parties, how they're perceived. Send us your thoughts and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We are talking today about basically party leadership. And this came to mind because of some shifts that happened at the DAP National Congress over the weekend, which saw basically Lim Guan Eng become national chairman, Anthony Lok become secretary general, and Lim Kit Siang retire. And so that just had us thinking really about, A, what the impact of that is, but also more broadly, what does a party's leadership signal about the party itself, particularly to the public? And we would like to hear from you. What do you think of our current crop of political leaders? Are you happy with them? Do you perceive them well, I guess is the question. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, examining that second bit, right, this idea of what leadership says about a party, is Shazwan Mustafa Kamal, Associate Director at Vriens & Partners. Shazwan, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we covered this earlier, but wanted to get your take on it as well. What did you make of Lim Kit Siang's retirement and Lim Guan Eng's ascendancy, so to speak?
I think it was probably the most logical conclusion or the next steps for DAP. As you're all aware, YB Lim Guan Eng is no longer able to extend his current tenure as Secretary General. And I think Lim Kit Siang took the lead in terms of perhaps showing an example to other statesmen who have, you know, not yet resigned from active politics. But I think the DAP's decision is a good one in that it sort of signals the party's embrace of younger leaders. And I think the past several years has shown that, and a lot of political parties are in need of this fresh leadership.
DAP, of course, wasn't the only party that had a big meeting recently. UMNO General Assembly recently concluded as well. What did you observe of the dynamics between the various UMNO leaders at the AGM?
I think, as opposed to the DAP, who are thinking a bit more broadly about, I think, future trajectory in terms of leadership, UMNOs was quite clear. They were quite solely focused on the issue of general elections, whether it's going to be held sooner or later. And the dynamics between the two factions within the UMNO AGM was quite apparent. One aligned to Zahid Hamidi and the other to Ismail Sabri. And I don't think none of the leaders at the AGM gave a signal or indication of any long-term policy thinking or anything beyond general elections. So I think that's quite clear. UMNO's focus right now is on the immediate. I think in terms of future trajectory, that remains to be seen.
So let's look at PKR, right, where Rafizi Ramli has recently said he's returning and running for the vice presidency. How do you see this working out? I mean, is there a lot of appetite in PKR for change?
I think internally, PKR has been grappling with its inner demons for the past few years. Problems surrounding its leadership didn't just appear overnight. It was not an issue specific to 2018, 2019. It had been apparent for the last few party elections. I think if you were to do a quick Google search, you'll find that PKR has never had one party election that was not blemished or was not controversial, to say the least. Whether or not Rafizi is the answer is a slippery slope in the sense that PKR has traditionally relied much of its reform efforts on the shoulders of one person. And I think it has to go beyond that. Rafizi Ramli's entry into the foray is a welcome one, but I think it will be heavily contested by those aligned to the current leadership, aka Anwar Ibrahim. And I think those battle lines are being drawn as we speak. There's been fillers sent out that you have, other leaders such as Saifuddin Nasution, who will likely challenge Rafizi Ramli for the deputy presidency.
If we look at the Malaysian political landscape as a whole, how much power does the party head typically wield?
I think it would depend on the makeup of the party. But traditionally, I think if you look at UMNO, for example, the party president has a great influence in terms of determining, obviously, party policy, party direction. But more importantly, I think in a Malaysia context, the party president has power to determine over candidates, election candidates. Take UMNO, for example. Just using the case of UMNO, while you have Prime Minister like Ismail Sabri, who is UMNO vice president, he does not have power or total say in deciding who the candidates are for election. That would lie in the prerogative of the UMNO president, Zahid Hamidi. So then lies those dynamics. And I think especially if you are a political party with very well political roots and history, that goes a long way. And especially rings true for older parties like UMNO and even PKR to a certain extent. PKR has been here for more than 20 years, so it's no longer by any means a young party.
Just to draw a distinction, right, what is the difference between being influential in your own party as opposed to being influential or popular, for that matter, with the electorate?
I think there is also a very slippery slope as well. I think it would depend. A lot of politicians have always tried to walk both worlds, but there's a fine line between popular within your own party and popular within the people, per se. I mean, you take, for instance, maybe Tony Pua. You know, he was viewed by many as being popular amongst the electorate, the people, for his various exposés and role in the opposition. But as you can see, the recent party elections within the AP did not translate this, right? Because, he failed to even clinch a seat at the DAP's Central Election Committee level. So there is that disconnect as well, I think. And I think there are a lot of internal dynamics to unpack when you talk about influence within a political party as opposed to being a popular public figure.
And how deeply does the electorate associate a party with its leader?
I think personality politics are still quite simple, I think, in Malaysia. I mean, they do associate it quite deeply with, a politician with the political party. For instance, I think there have been some instances where I think parties have tried to sort of disassociate themselves with the actions of a particular leader. But it's very hard to do so, especially if you were previously a leader who held an influential position within the party as well. For instance, Najib Razak. Very difficult for UMNO to fully disassociate themselves from Najib, or even the controversies that came along with him. And UMNO did try to do so briefly after the last GE. But obviously, as of right now, they've welcomed him back, and it's almost as though nothing happened in 2018.
Recently we've been hearing a lot of calls for the older leaders of parties to step aside to make way for new leadership. And I wanted to ask you a couple of questions in relation to this, right? Firstly, where is this coming from? And secondly, do you see the stepping aside happening anytime soon?
I think just from the movements within DAP, grumblings within PKR, and even inner sort of dynamics within UMNO, not at the leadership level, but perhaps at a more grassroots level, there is a discontent towards perhaps senior leadership, in the sense that they understand how the landscape is, but they've operated under a very similar sort of old school premise, right, that no longer holds true to the future of young voters. Because obviously, when you talk about perhaps voters of the past, certain issues might ring true. But the dynamics involving, I think, younger voters are much more complex, are much more multifaceted than that. People don't just vote because of a brand, or i.e. Daqing. They vote based on policies, on positions. So I think it is something that's coming to play. Older politicians still play an important role within the party, because in an advisory context, or even to sort of provide stability as parties transition to younger leadership, that's their role. And I think you can't separate the two. But in the past 2 or 3 years, we do see quite a seismic shift in terms of dissenting voices challenging traditional leadership and the need for new faces.
Speaking of that transition to leadership, are there differences between the major parties in terms of how they groom new leaders and create paths to the top?
I guess every political party has that grooming aspect of nurturing young leaders. But I think in a lot of the current political parties, the big parties in Malaysia, I think the challenge is really trying to groom younger leaders, not at the expense of political expediency. I think a lot of political parties don't allow young leaders to sort of like grow organically. They're always tethered or tied to perhaps work under the shadow of older, more established politicians, and then end up becoming parts of factions. And then, then the issue really of leadership really comes into play.
Any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
I think probably we should just enjoy the process. It's a very, for better or for worse, democracy is alive in Malaysia. We live in very interesting times. And, I think whatever it is, as voters, we should be cognizant of the value each political party brings and make our choices accordingly.
Shazwan, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Shazwan Mustafa Kamal, Associate Director at Vriens & Partners, basically talking to us about and drawing some distinctions, right, when it comes to how much a party's leadership affects the way we all view parties. And we're talking here about political parties specifically because, well, UMNO's General Assembly was last week, DAP's National Congress was over the weekend, and we've seen, at least in one sense, some shifts happening in the DAP leadership, and that just got us wondering about that very question. So we'd like to hear from you. What do you think of our current crop of political leaders, and would you like to see newer leaders come up? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back for your messages. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:52. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila, and we have been talking this hour about DAP, but not really. We started off looking at the shift in leadership that happened at the National Congress yesterday, which saw, again, Lim Kit Siang retiring from active politics, Lim Guan Eng becoming national chairman, and Anthony Lok becoming secretary general. And, you know, in the second half of our show, we were exploring not so much those shifts, but just the general perception of party leadership and what that says about the party. You know, basically the names that we associate with the main political parties in our country and how that then colours the public perception of them. And we've been asking you about that. You know, do you feel that way? And also, what do you think of our current crop of political leaders? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, a sampling of messages, a lot about Lim Kit Siang, actually.
Right, so let's start with this one from Lee Jun, who says, Lim Kit Siang and DAP, at least they were stalwarts and stuck with DAP through thick and thin. PKR was marred by people like Azmin Ali and his band of people. DAP leader Lim Kit Siang has gone to jail or has been detained countless times. Despite that, he never defected. So that says much about his character. Guan Eng has also gone to jail or has been detained before. I don't know about character, but I will say about ideology, perhaps, and sticking behind an ideology.
So this was something that our guest James Chin raised earlier, right? The fact that for better or for worse, and, you know, I think your mileage is going to vary depending on how you feel about the ideology of the party or the man. He's not wavered. It's been pretty consistent in terms of what it is that DAP stands for and what it is that the leadership behind DAP stands for. Again, how you feel about the party will depend on, you know, how far that goes with you. But at the very least, it's true, considering the kinds of shifts and jumps that we see in other parties, it is true that they don't have as much of that. So we have Dennis, who is kind of weighing in on the popularity, right, of the people involved, saying Lim Kit Siang can still be useful in DAP and can still be a likable personality. So it would soothe more nerves if Lim Guan Eng stepped down rather than Lim Kit Siang. He is currently a liability. It's nothing personal, but in politics, you need to be likable.
I don't want to comment so much on the likability because, but I will say that I think it's a tough path to forge when you have someone ahead of you and when that someone is, to quote our guest James Chin again, casts a long shadow over the party, right? Because whatever likability you may have on your own, you will forever be compared to the person who came before.
It is also worth saying that Lim Kit Siang is in his 80s. And so I think in terms of even if we are saying that we would rather see one than the other, it is also important to think about age, right? And to ask that question that has been asked over and over again, whether it is that we want to continue seeing only people of a certain age bracket calling the shots, whether it's in parties or in larger situations of politics. Just a clarification from Cheong Kiat, who says Lim Kit Siang is not retiring from politics. He is now the mentor for DAP. So I think what we said was actually active politics. And that comes because he's pulling back, or he pulled back and withdrew from the party elections. And I think that it's worth saying that that is a completely different sort of position, right? The difference between being still part of a party but also not involved in active politics.
Yes, and I think the key here is that the active part, which sends a particular message, and I think a particular handing over of the torch in a certain way as well. We have Ro saying, pity to see Kit Siang step down, but I think it was more Anthony-like than Lok, as he was popular during his transport ministerial role.
Yeah, that's coming through loud and clear, isn't it? The popularity of Anthony-like. and perhaps also, just to extend that a little bit, the importance of being liked. And I think that we often talk about politics, especially here on our station, I know we're very guilty of this, through the lens of integrity and, you know, just loyalty and all the rest of it. But likability actually counts for a whole lot. It is what has kept some people in the spotlight perhaps more than or longer than they should be.
We have Maggie saying, after Lanka Sheraton, a similar question was asked about our leaders, and I still have the same answer. I don't see any leaders on the horizon. There are good potentials, but they may not be in the same political parties, nor would they be running for the seat where I'm residing. Perhaps the day will come when Malaysia really celebrates diversity and can unite for the good of the country. You know, Maggie, I think that's the whole not where I vote is a sentiment that many people feel. People not being in the same political party is the other one, right? Which is really a struggle, because especially if you see people with potential that are across different party lines, where do you then stake your support, and how do you decide what you think the way forward is?
That is before we even get into MP allocations. Mm. You know, and that is something that has come up quite a bit. It's something I mull over also when I think about independent candidates who don't even have the party machinery behind them. You might entirely agree with their stand. You might feel, you know, a strong pull to say, yes, actually, this person is talking sense. They're doing things or thinking about things the way I would like. But then the way our election is structured, I think people often feel, I don't know, you know, as if that's not really an option. We also have this from Mai, who says, I think that DAP has shown how political parties need to be run and managed in this era of social media, where new 18-year-old voters are in the focus. So you need to reform not just in terms of rhetoric, but practice. So kudos. I do hope that other parties within Pakatan Harapan take note of the dinosaurs that need to make way for the younger generation to bring Malaysia to greater heights.
I like that point about using social media. And I think an extension of that is also understanding that the landscape that they operate in is a little bit different. The way people talk about politics might be a little bit different. You pointed out Kit Siang being 80. And I think part of the stepping aside, not in a direct way, but in some ways also, he operated in a different time. And the way politics works now is also different. And I think parties do need to keep that in mind as they look forward.
It's just an acknowledgement. Mm. Sometimes there isn't even an acknowledgement that it is a different time. So we've been talking today about leadership, specifically leadership within parties and what that says about our perception of said parties because of DAP's shifts in that area. Keep those thoughts coming and keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.